There you go. All right, folks. Order, order. So, Carla, what number are we at?
We are on number 23.
We're at 23, and we got about 50 minutes left. I think it's unlikely we'll get to 70. We'll probably, if we're lucky, get to 50, 60. Let me just offer some positive encouragement for people. If you're testifying on a matter where we've already heard lots of testimony, and you think you can do it in a minute rather than two, and instead of repeating some of the themes or something additionally that you want us to focus on, please do so. You'll get the full amount of time, and we're listening and making notes, but sometimes focusing on the area that hasn't been addressed is more useful. But thank you all for your patience, and we'll start with you, sir.
Are we on? Okay. Mr. President and commissioners, Mark Whitlow, I'm an attorney at Perkins Coie. I'm here on behalf of the Retail Task Force and the International Council of Shopping Centers. We did appear last time, ran out of time, so we're back with a different theme. We're going to talk about the Portland plan. Your director advised you before the last hearing started that if, when in doubt, go back to the Portland plan. It's been a while since it was passed, but it identified food deserts as a big problem. And all these years later, as we look at the work now before you, it seems that the food desert problem is still there, but it's sort of getting buried, if you would. So we think the city has a solution. It's to provide adequate zoning for auto-accommodating uses and developments that provide the platform for grocery. And grocery is a tough business, minimum markets or margins, and you have to provide adequate zoning to accommodate that type of use. So mixed use that requires verticality prices a grocery supermarket out of the business. So take a look at your handout. The last page is the dial from figure Roman numeral 7-1. It shows that of the general commercial, that's the auto accommodating zoning now in the city, 60% of at least the lots are going to something else other than CE, which is the only other auto-accommodating zone. So you're losing huge tracts of auto-accommodating land that's needed to provide the groceries that would solve the food desert problem before you. So we're urging you to, instead of diminishing CE zoning, create more of it, do it in strategic locations. It's also the zone that does not prohibit drive-throughs. Groceries use drive-throughs in their own businesses for fuel, pharmacy, and grocery pickup.
Mr. Whitlow, do you have an amendment you're supporting, or are you just asking for something new?
We are supporting P60, P44, P51, and we're in opposition to P32. We would offer to form a work group with you. We have all of the grocers available to sit down and talk about how to solve the food desert problem through zoning. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jim Gorder, a resident of Southwest Portland. I'm also a member of the Residential Infill Project Stakeholder Advisory Committee, but I'm speaking for myself today. I'm speaking in opposition to Amendment P45, the Middle Housing Amendment. There's a great need for smaller, more affordable housing in Portland. P45 is not the answer. It is a heavy-handed, one-dimensional solution to a problem which presents a variety of subtleties and opportunities. It inserts into the comp plan at the last minute an idea that requires careful study and impact analysis. There's been no neighborhood involvement. It would decimate some of our most complete, character-filled neighborhoods. It covers huge swaths of the city's most complete neighborhoods. It would displace established residents living in some of the last vestiges of semi-affordable rental housing. It would incentivize the demolition of smaller, older homes. You would see the sales of backhoes booming in this town. As I understand it, it could be inserted into the code as an overlay. Be honest, it is not single-family housing or single dwelling housing. A quarter mile around the centers is too large and arbitrary, and it makes the zoning map of Portland look like an overflowing plate of donuts. There's no guarantee of affordability. It segregates middle housing, we should be looking at opportunities for dispersed middle housing. Please pull this amendment off the table. Thoroughly study the implications, study the alternatives, involve residents in neighborhoods that would be impacted. Develop a plan to guarantee affordability. Then, if you feel it is still a worthwhile proposal, bring it back with openness and for a full vetting before the city and its citizens. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. And Commissioner Fritz?
I just want to clarify. So this is a broad policy. Anything that would implement it would have to come back to council after that full public process. So it's not like this can spring up tomorrow. The zoning code currently doesn't allow it.
No, but it does say within the half mile. Or within the
yes,
quarter
and
mile.
Still, there would need to be a full public process to decide what would the rules be, what would that look like. So I just want to allay some of the concerns that I've heard throughout the hearings. Your point is well made, though, that there does need to be that process.
I have about a 2-foot thick stack of paper from these hearings, and you're going to make the final cut at one of my favorite lines. It makes the Portland zoning map look like a plate of donuts. It's very evocative. And so.
Although I'm afraid to some of us it sounds tasty.
I'm sorry I even opened that up, but sir, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. My name is Brant Aaron. I'm a traffic engineer with McKenzie. I was here the last hearing, and I wanted to talk specifically, add into the record some information on P60 and P32. So I'm kind of following up from some recent testimony, including Mr. Whitlow's. So regarding P60, it's important to have a wide range of facilities available, including auto accommodating. And what was interesting was do traffic studies all over the region, and we had one recently in Northeast Portland where we looked at what's the alternative mode, and we proposed 18%, and PBOT staff came back and said, no, you can only use 16%. Our studies show it's only 16% in that area. Citywide, it's about 80%, 81% right now is auto trips. And the 2035 projection in the RTP model is 76%. So, again, autos will continue to be the majority of trips into the future. So it's important to have those facilities available. And then on P32, I wanted to speak against that. One of the things, this is regarding the drive-thrus, and further restricting the ability to have drive-thrus. One of the things that staff has mentioned is concerns about safety with pedestrians and so forth. We weren't able to find any documentation that drive-thrus create a safety problem for pedestrians or other users. But your codes, your standards currently provide for adequate safety. You require separate pedestrian paths. You require landscape setbacks. You have driveway standards that already address those standards. And in most cases, when you have a drive-through facility, you don't need additional driveway locations. You can use the driveways that you are already provided with. That was basically what I wanted to add.
Can I ask a question? Does P32 prohibit the sort of hybrid drive-throughs that are in certain grocery stores where people can come and pick up groceries? They don't look like Fred Meyer has one. They don't
right.
look like traditional drive-throughs. They're just areas where you can bring your car around, and you've ordered the groceries, and they are put in there. Would that, Joe? Would that prohibit those hybrid? No. Okay. Well, I'd like to get clarification on that because the one thing I realized that. This drive-through issue is taking on almost mystical significance in our discussion. And there's some people up here that feel very strongly about it, and I respect that. But I am personally concerned about taking away an option for people that otherwise cannot get out of their cars. And so I believe there are issues among older adults, people with disabilities, and people and families with children where there's a convenience factor that has to be balanced against, you know, our other values. And I want to find out if we can thread that needle.
Yeah.
But at this point, it does feel like it's a pretty polarized debate.
Yeah, to your point, we worked on the Fred Meyer on Canyon in Beaverton, and the Beaverton code actually classified that where you drive up, you know, you order online, you drive up, and they bring out your groceries to you. They can classify that as a drive-through facility. because people did not get out of their car, so we had to go through a conditional use. We want to make sure that that sort of thing doesn't happen.
I'll follow on that. Thank you very much. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Next three, please.
26, 27, and 28, Jim Labenthal, L. Miller in Carlton, Oregon, and Bob Bernstein. And they'll be followed by 29, 30, and 31, Robert Harper, Bob Carroll, and Steve Dottier.
Gentlemen, welcome. Who would like to start?
I would.
Go ahead, sir.
We've submitted a letter that...
name first.
I think.
No, if you could put your name in the record.
Oh, Jim Labenthal, and I'm a member of Riverside Golf Club. And I'd like to touch on a few points in our letter that we've submitted, and we are submitting new information. We have provided a quick summary of some of the stuff we've submitted in the past in terms of the golf industry and our opposition to changing Riverside from open space designation to industrial. One of the areas we have not talked about is habitat at Riverside, and it's come up more recently with the Broadmoor discussion of habitat values. And if you look at the larger geography, we're sandwiched between Columbia Edgewater and Broadmoor, and we see wildlife moving back and forth across our area. And so a couple of the illustrations that we've included in the packet that we've given to you show that if you put an industrial designation on, you essentially sever that habitat corridor. So while there are habitat values on Broadmoor, there are also values on Riverside. Also, surprising to us, the number of trees was quite different between the two sites. Our site's about twice as big as the Broadmoor site, but it has about 900 trees, and there's only about 100 trees on the Broadmoor site. So we've got nine times as many trees. I think we just have a thicker tree cover between our fairways. So we don't believe there's a strong case for maintaining Riverside as an industrial sanctuary, and we'd ask that you support Amendment M34, removing us from the industrial sanctuary and preserving the open space.
Thank you very much, sir, and thank you for your written testimony. Okay. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Lucas Miller. I'm General Manager of Riverside Golf and Country Club, and would just like to talk about the possible negative impacts of the industrial designation. The club's celebrating its 90th birthday, probably as you know, this July, and I'd just like to talk about our concerns about the possible negative impact of the industrial overlay. In this outdoor recreational industry, we experience a 5 to 10% member attrition rate on average annually. Members leave clubs such as ours for a number of usual reasons, such as job changes, home relocations, marriage, divorce, accident, injury, and even death. So we're continually marketing for new prospective members. We have a full-time membership director who's responsible for that and dedicated to that continual effort, since it's so imperative to replace existing members with new members. We often need to sell these prospective members on the reasons they should choose our club over others in Portland. And, of course, the other clubs are doing the same thing, and we're just worried that it'll be easy for their, for their salespeople to say something like, I'm not sure what's going on at Riverside. I heard the land's been designated as future industrial, and, maybe you should ask them about that. And, of course, just that little question about the future of our club, maybe enough to sway these prospective members to join our competitors. So it's, naturally be difficult to confirm and quantify because we don't really hear from the other members, these members who joined other clubs, on why they didn't join ours. So I guess, Jim and I were thinking we may need to provide our members and staff with little talking cards with speaking points on Oregon land use, and as silly as it may seem, I think that might be the only way we can get through a complex conversation like that consistently. So in closing, we request that you support Amendment 34 and retain this open space and wildlife corridor. Our club doesn't plan to convert its land to industrial use, and we plan to continue operating as a golf country club for at least another 90 years. Thank you for your consideration throughout this process.
Thank you very much, sir. Welcome.
Hello. I'm Bob Bernstein, and I'm sort of a citizen scientist, and I'll be doing turtle surveys tomorrow around Fano Creek. So let's talk turtles. Turtles are found around Broadmoor Golf Course in that area of the slough. Most people think that turtles are aquatic animals. Well, part of the time they are, but they're also terrestrial. And they're on land to find nesting sites, dig their nests, finding mates, to relocate, during different times of year due to hot and cold temperatures. And painted turtles are only one of the 12 sensitive species that are found around Broadmoor, and each of them have their own stories. This amendment, which I oppose, would fragment their habitat, causing loss of genetic diversity, loss of nesting sites, leave them more vulnerable to predation. When you crowd prey animals into a small area, it's like setting up a supermarket for predators, basically. These animals have been around for eons. It would be nice if they could exist in Portland. That picture that I gave you, what it said to me is the little turtle saying, well, is there room for me in Portland anymore? I'm not sure. The comp plan has many statements about increasing wildlife habitat areas around the slough, take care of migrating species, which the turtle is, and their routes. Turtles tend to use the same routes over and over, so turtles could just end up perishing on blacktop or getting squished by cars. It also says to avoid harming the environment if at all possible. Why is this amendment even being brought forward? It makes no sense to me. And I thank Commissioner Fritz and Fish for opposing this amendment, and I wish others would change their mind. And it deeply bothers me that you have bullet points in this plan that speak to protecting habitat, but those bullet points do not fall under any commissioner's or any bureau's mission statement. So you have empty statements about wildlife that get trampled on, basically. And if you're going to do that sort of stuff, then don't try to take credit for having something that takes care of wildlife, because it doesn't. So I would like to see one of you, or all of you, bring forth some sort of amendment with teeth that if you're going to have bullet points to protect wildlife, that somebody owns those amendments and is responsible for their implementation.
Sir, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Carla, next three, please.
Our 29, 30, and 31, Robert Harper, Bob Carroll, and Steve Dottier. They'll be followed by 32, 33, and 34, Stephanie Stewart, Paul Leisner, and John Larson.
Welcome. Why don't you start us off?
My name is Robert Harper, and I'm here in opposition to Amendment M42. So in opposing this amendment, I'd like to express why I believe our neighborhood is already, without this amendment, very well suited to the sort of dense residential development that will make this city a more prosperous and equitable place over the next 20 years. What I think is great about our neighborhood is that we see in existing plans for the Fremont Corridor a clear vision for dense residential development accommodated by the existing R1 zoning. Much of Fremont, as you may know, between Mississippi and Vancouver is R1, and that's a sort of development that can build the solid and sustainable density that we need in these sort of residential areas. And while that potential may not be realized at this point, we clearly have zoning to accommodate smart, forward-looking development in that area today. For instance, the largest chunk of land in this amendment is about 58,000 square feet. So that could accommodate 58 residential units today. So there's tons of potential in this spot, and I'm not necessarily calling for the tear down of my friends and neighbors' homes. I'd like to point out, though, that the lack of density in housing of Fremont is simply not a zoning problem. There's tons of potential with the existing smart and sustainable R1 designation. And it's the sort of potential that won't overwhelm our already rapidly growing neighborhood like CM2 zoning would. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Hello. My name is Steve Dotterer, and I'm from the Bosco Milligan Foundation, and I'm following up on Deborah O'Neill's testimony. I just want to hit a couple of the specific amendments that we're supporting. The amendment for diverse residential neighborhoods, and then another one that is calling for the resolution of conflicts in historic districts, and we support those and hope the council will adopt them because I think it will help resolve some of the current controversies in those areas. And I don't think, particularly with Eli Spivak's comments this morning about, or this earlier, about two different types of middle housing, one where you're fitting more within existing buildings, I see that as a measure that would work with this policy to get us where we need to go in terms of producing both dwelling units and preservation. We're also supportive of the amendments in Chapter 4, which make it clear that the city is really reinforcing the historic resources elements, and recognizing that the city's actions are limited by the state owner consent law, and we think it's appropriate to be clear about that. And finally, the Bosco Milligan Foundation supports the Eastmoreland and Kings Hill Historic District proposed downzoning amendments. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Carla, next three.
Is Bob Carroll here? Okay, the next three are Stephanie Stewart, Paul Leisner, and John Larson, 32, 33, and 34. They'll be followed by Helen Jones, Bruce Campbell, and Barbara Strunk, 35, 36, and 37.
Good afternoon. Welcome. Hi, I'm Stephanie Stewart. I'm with the Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. I live at 1121 Southeast 50th, and three of us are here today to speak to three of the amendments, one we support and two we oppose. And I'll start with the one we support. It's actually amendment number F61, and it addresses a one-block section of Upper Hawthorne. Just the lots lining Hawthorne and just between Southeast 50th and Southeast 51st. There's a natural transition that happens at the bend in Hawthorne where Hawthorne intersects 50th and then travels south. And this transition is reinforced with a downgrading of transportation classes by two classes at this location. And this natural transition has been emphasized and reinforced with multiple public processes, including the Hawthorne Transportation Project. And the built environment of the commercial lots lining Hawthorne between 50th and 51st, again, a one-block section, they're at a low-intensity commercial level at this point, which really interacts nicely with the neighborhood, and it doesn't impose on the residential lots. The relationship between these businesses and the residential lots is great at this point, and we believe the lowest designation commercial intensity for this area is a positive move, and the amendment F61 supports that. However, the language of the amendment states that it will be all lots east of Southeast 50th, between 50th and 51st. But the map that goes along with this actually excludes two lots, the lots that are at the intersection but still east of Southeast 50th. And we would suggest, well, we'd like to clarify if that's a mistake in the map. And if, or do you think it's a mistake?
It was a mistake. My amendment was not done this lot, this lot, this lot. It was everything east of.
Okay.
So that,
well, that would be great.
Okay.
We would support that.
Thank you.
That's a friendly amendment.
Yes.
That's as friendly as it gets.
Yes.
Thank you.
We always try to be friendly. I'm Paul Leisner. I'm speaking in my role as a Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association board member, and on behalf of the Neighborhood Association, we're asking you to oppose the proposed Amendment M28 that would upzone the property on the northeast corner of 60th and Belmont. Our Neighborhood Association's been very interested in that site and its future development since the 1980s. It's been vacant for quite a while. We were also a little concerned, given our longstanding interest, that this just came up fairly late in the process, and we were sort of scrambling to understand what was being proposed and how we could be involved. One of our main points is that we feel it's important that the needed infrastructure be in place before a development is allowed to occur. The intersection at 60th and Belmont is dangerous and functions poorly. We've known that for many years. It has the city. The location had more injuries in the last 12 years than all but one other location in our neighborhood. It's got a very problematic level of service. Traffic backs up in all different directions there. People are then cutting through. It's causing cut-through traffic. So our neighborhood and PBOT have been aware of the problems there for many years. In the past, PBOT worked with us to do some planning for all of 60th. So there is in the TSP project 70006, the 60th Avenue corridor improvements, which actually included some necessary infrastructure improvements to that intersection to make it function better. So we really feel that until those improvements are done, we shouldn't be upzoning that property, and we should be supporting supporting what the planning staff have originally suggested in the Planning Commission. We'd love to see it developed, but we want to make sure that it's developed at a scale that's appropriate for that site and the available infrastructure. There are two large buildings, the old Adventist Hospital and another structure that are fairly tall, but they're already sucking up a lot of that infrastructure capacity there, so we don't feel it would be appropriate to upzone that area. And again, we certainly don't fault the property owner for looking for this opportunity because it will help them maximize their return, but we sort of count on you guys and us and the planning staff and all of us to make sure that these changes are actually good for the whole community. So we again encourage you to oppose this amendment.
Could you give me the number of it again, please?
It's M28.
Thank you.
John, welcome.
Hi, I'm John Larson, 5829 Southeast Salmon. I'm also here representing the Mount Tabor Association, Neighborhood Association. And I'm here to oppose Amendment S8, which is about Portland Nursery at 50th and, or 53rd and Stark, which would take what is now a split between a commercial zone and a residential zone and grant full commercial zoning to that property. We are absolutely in support of Portland Nursery. We love them. We're delighted to have them in our neighborhood. We all patronize them, and it's a terrific neighborhood partner. And we support the continued nursery aspect of Portland Nursery. What we are really afraid of with giving them full commercial zoning is that it will have the unintended consequence of making that property far more valuable as a non-nursery, as some other commercial enterprise. And whatever the property owner's intention is now, that it will signal to somebody that they could come in and buy that property and turn it into something altogether other from a nursery. So although I think your intention to support them as a nursery in granting and suggesting this amendment is a positive one, we're really terrified of what the long-term outcome of that might be. We think that the Planning Commission staff on this sustainability and planning staff did a really elegant job of extending the commercial zone for them. They added a full 123 feet of commercial depth to their property, which gives them a lot more flexibility, and they've taken the formerly non-conforming nursery use on the residential portion and made it be conditional rather than non-conforming. So they've gone a long way to accommodate Portland Nursery, and we have met with them repeatedly to try to help solve this problem, and we're just very pleased. We think the staff did a great job of kind of cutting the Gordian knot on that thing and making it work. And actually, you know, you've seen us here before on some contentious issues from time to time. And we're really pleased to be able to say we think the Planning Commission staff did a great job on this stuff, and we're really pleased with what they did, and we want to support them and commend what their solution was on this, and oppose the amendment S8.
John, thank you very much. Thank you for your written testimony, and thank you we're 3 hours into a hearing that's complicated and sometimes a little dry, and thank you for your kind words about the staff.
Thank you.
Next three, please.
Our 35, 36, and 37, Helen Jones, Bruce Campbell, and Barbara Strunk. They'll be followed by 38, 39, and 40, Kristen Shorey, Soren Impe, and Steve Kilduff.
Okay. We're in the home stretch. Welcome.
You guys are unbelievable.
Well, you too. You waited patiently. Thank you.
I'm Helen Jones, speaking in opposition to Amendment M33. I haven't been sleeping well. I'm still in shock. If bullseye glass were a smart bomb, I'd live in the blast zone. A daycare center, a Fred Meyer corporate parking lot, and a small city park where local kids play is on the far rim of the blast zone. I went to a talk hosted by the East Side Portland Air Coalition to get more information. Aaron Brokovich was there. It was worse than I thought. Every neighborhood in the city has blast zones. ESCO, Precision Castparts, Intel, just to name a few. Ms. Brokovich wasn't in town chasing ambulances. She comes to Portland anyway to visit her son and grandchildren. Now the visits are a tax deduction. A few weeks later, close friends called to let me know the city council was going to rezone the Broadmoor golf course next to them from open space, OS, to industrial. It was going to be paved over. Jobs would come. I thought about the Fred Meyer parking lot and the park next to it and wondered, what's the temperature difference between the empty asphalt lot and my small kid-filled park on a sunny day? Do you guys know? I asked Google. It's easy to drown in the information. I took the first few entries. One is from a National Geographic article, another bullet points from a company selling sod, and the third a search done in Arizona on open space and urban environments. I read those articles and realized my friends don't live next to a golf course. It's open space with benefits. Open space with trees is 30 to 40 degrees cooler than concrete or asphalt. Sit in the shade of any tree in any park in the city and you'll know this is true. One tree removes 26 pounds of carbon dioxide. That equals 11,000 miles of auto emissions. 1 acre of trees eliminates 13 tons of particles and gases annually. A big tree removes 60 to 70 times the pollution of a small tree does. This is one of the rare times I think size and age matters. The EPA and DEQ aren't going to save us. They're not coming. The U.S. Forest Service discovered the toxic levels of heavy metals in my park next to the Fred Meyer parking lot. It's up to you and me. We're the ones that are going to save us. Every tree in open space makes a difference, whether it's one tree on a lot with one bedroom house or a grove between the airport and a busy highway. While it's cold comfort that the owner of Bullseye lives in his own blast zone, I don't blame the developers or the business owners. Scorpion and the frog, it's an old fable. It's in their nature, but it's not in ours. There will be no apps making a cloud rain. We're not going to put our lips around our smartphone and inhale fresh air. Only open space and old trees make fresh cold air. And every last one matters in these times of record heat and automobile density. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
My name is Bruce Campbell, and I'd also like to thank the commissioners for their patience and hearing everybody speak about all these issues. Today, again, I'd like to speak in strong opposition to proposed Amendment M33, which proposes to turn the Broadmoor Golf Course into an industrial sanctuary. Sometimes I wonder who came up with that term, industrial sanctuary. I mean, it's very, very Orwellian. Now, I'm used to wildlife having sanctuaries, but, you know, private enterprise having sanctuaries, that's a new one for me. The trouble is with this amendment is that it privatizes the public commons and it turns into a death sentence for the wildlife habitats and Broadmoor's beautiful old growth trees. Over a century ago, John Charles Olmsted helped to create Portland's world-class green spaces and parks, providing our city with a livable future. We should heed Olmsted's progressive spirit and continue his good work. Great cities all over the world protect their green spaces. If it wishes, let Broadmoor sell its property, but not to industrial development. Sell it to the city of Portland. Convert the Broadmoor into a public nature park, wealthy in wetlands, bird songs, and yes, turtles. There's turtles everywhere out there. Let Broadmoor be our gift to future generations, not some kind of booby prize. Please, please toss Amendment M33 in the recycle bin. Let's protect our open spaces and be good stewards to all the life that depends upon our goodwill and continued vigilance. Thank you.
Sir, Mike Kauk isn't here to say the following, so I'll say it for him. It would have been a shame to go through an entire comp plan process without invoking the Olmsted name. I have a copy of that plan in my office that I copied from the archives. They have the original. One of the sort of historical facts that I love is that John Charles Olmsted was both the son and the nephew of Frederick Law Olmsted.
Yeah.
And you can sort of figure that one out, but it was both the son and the nephew, which is fascinating.
Very inspiring to have a visionary that lives so far, you know, in the past.
Everything he put on paper, everything that he envisioned has sort of been filled out 100 and something years later. It's extraordinary, just going around in a horse and buggy. and sort of imagining Mount Tabor, imagining a wildlife corridor on the west side, imagining a forest park, imagining all these things.
Let's carry on with good work.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Hi. I'm Barbara Strunk. I am the United Neighborhoods for Reform representative to the Residential Infill Project. I am testifying for and against Amendment P45 as it is currently written. That's the middle housing amendment. We support strongly the concept of a higher density transition zone between mixed use and single family zones. However, we caution you to proceed slowly with this middle housing idea and propose the following amendment to the amendment, and that is limit the rezoned transition areas around centers to 200 to 300 feet or two blocks of centers with complete services, including frequent public transit. Some of our reasons are as follows. We think a quarter of a mile around each neighborhood center is far too large. As drawn, middle housing zones would encompass most of the inner east side and the middle east side, opening up large areas of the city to the risk of destroying traditional neighborhood character, historic housing, and urban green spaces that both the comp plan and the residential infill project are charged with protecting. We need a thoughtful process, including modeling, to judge the impacts of such a zone change on neighborhoods. The residential infill project has not completed its work regarding scale and mass of single-family houses. Code must be clear and transparent that much smaller houses are the sustainable, affordable way of the future. This includes any buildings in any proposed middle housing density housing zone. Before such a large area of the city is rezoned middle housing, the goals around middle housing must be clearly defined. What is an appropriate center? What is the size and price of middle housing density? This moves too fast. Do some thoughtful modeling on the impacts of this proposal. Designate a much smaller area in the city in which to initially try out the middle housing zone idea and then move from there. Thank you.
And I just want to have the same comment to you that there will be a process, and the reason that I'm probably going to support this is it says that the zoning within a quarter mile where appropriate. So that process will allow us to decide, is it one block, is it a quarter mile, or is it something in between?
And hopefully there will be a very strong public input process.
Absolutely, yes. Thank you.
Then we're going to do a little housekeeping, and we're going to close at 5:30 sharp. So the next six people are going to be called. That gets us to what number, Carla?
Six. Well, that will get us through 40. To 43, who is Ed Fisher.
So apologies to all of you who are 44 and above who came hoping to testify. And we'll do a little housekeeping at 5:30 to talk about next steps and opportunities to be heard.
And you did say, President Fisher, at the beginning that we'll continue the hearing till 2 o'clock next Wednesday.
Correct.
And what we did today was have the first 20 people who didn't, the people who didn't get to testify last get to go at that point. And, in fact, we won't be taking testimony from anybody else. So if you're here, you're in line, we'll get to testify next week.
You have a golden ticket if you're here in line.
Exactly.
And we'll go through that after we hear from the last six people. Again, apologies to those of you who've been waiting patiently. But you will
never know. Some people might have left already.
You'll have a chance.
I'm 40. If somebody wants, I'll bump. If somebody wants to speak.
Carla, tell us who the next six are, and then we can do some horse trading.
The next six are Kristen Shorey, Soren Impe, Steve Kilduff, and then the last three would be Michael Mahaffey, Martha Steven, and Ed Fisher.
I'm Steve Kilduff, and I can bump. I got time.
Very kind. Is there someone that won't be able to come next week that would like to do a trade? Right here.
Okay.
That's a private transaction. You guys can work it out outside.
This is Portland in action. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. Do we have a third up here?
Well, he's coming.
That should be Mr. Kilduff. So whoever traded. Let's see.
Well, ma'am, why don't you start while we're waiting?
Yeah.
Good.
My name is Kristen Shorey, and I'm a resident of Sylvan Highlands, and I'm also a board member of the Neighborhood Association. Today I'm representing myself. As a board member, though, the last 5 years, I have seen a lot of development in our neighborhood. I've witnessed numerous developers come and present to our neighborhood in good faith to work with our neighbors. We have a growing matrix. We are moving from a single family to lots of condos. We have a new development that's going on at the end of Canyon Court that will be 244 apartments. We're a little nervous about the traffic impact that that's going to have in front of East Sylvan, which is designated to become the new Odyssey home. So our current zoning allows this increase. And most of the developers are small, and it's great to have them come and be supportive in our neighborhood. We support the Type 3 process that they go through. It's allowed for purposeful and reasonable growth, and our hilly, windy neighborhood needs to have that slow, reasonable growth. I'm requesting that the council does not approve Commissioner Novak's amendment, number 14, which is for 6141 Southwest Canyon Court, directly down from the 244 large unit that will be going in. The zoning change of the single parcel is unprecedented and unwarranted, as evidenced by the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability, who did a fantastic job doing research in November. This site is not a proposed center or corridor, and transit options are limited. Although there are some commercial services within a quarter mile, the transportation infrastructure is congested, and any changes merit consideration of a broader, more cohesive area. We completely agree. Thank you for your time.
Thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Thanks for hanging out with us. Welcome.
Hi, my name is Soren Impey, and I'm speaking on behalf of Bike Loud PDX, where I am a board member, and I will also speak for myself later. I'd like to thank the commissioners for the many projects outlined in the TSP, including improvements to our neighborhood greenways and bike facilities, and most especially protected bike facilities that have been proposed. We do have a concern about one of the amendments in particular, Amendment P90. Policy-based was struck from this language, and I strongly believe, so this is P90, which describes a transportation hierarchy. And we strongly believe, based on the Portland plan, the climate action plan, and the bicycle plan, that the transportation hierarchy should be a policy-based policy. so we strongly believe that language should not be struck from that part of the comprehensive plan. And I also want to speak in support of Project 40116, which was amended. And we want to support the designation of Northeast 7th as a major city bikeway rather than Northeast 9th. And the rationale for this is that this is already a route that's getting a lot of cut-through traffic and is a direct route with less elevation gain, whereas the alternative is indirect with lots of, meandering, parts of the route that we think are inappropriate. And now I'd just like to finish off by speaking for myself in support of P45, the missing middle. And in particular, I would like to mention that P45 is not an example of something that will demolish or destroy character of our neighborhoods, but that in many neighborhoods, the missing middle is part of the character. For example, in Buckman, where I live as a renter, the amendments S20, S21, and S22, which are upzoned currently, have many missing middle houses in them. Apartments, garden apartments, and duplexes. So I would like to point out that the missing middle is actually already a part of the character and history of our neighborhoods.
Thank you. Thanks. Thank you very much, sir. Welcome.
Commissioners, thank you so much for accepting my testimony this afternoon. Ty Wyman here speaking in support of N14, which pertains to 6141 Southwest Canyon Court. I have submitted a couple of letters to you before, and I have no intention of reiterating anything, but I attended the hearing last week, and there was a neighbor opponent, who testified, and I wanted to directly respond to some of his points. You have been given, I think, six pages, and I would refer you to page 3 of the documents I've submitted today, just to orient you. You will see 6141 Southwest Canyon Court in the lower left-hand corner. The amendment would redesignate that from R20 to R5. The testimony that you heard last week strongly suggested that there is a poor pedestrian environment in this area, and we absolutely disagree, and we think that the facts as put before you establish as much. There is continuous sidewalk from the site to the Sylvan commercial node. Not only is there continuous sidewalk, there's a mid-block crosswalk, of which you don't see a whole lot on the west side, as well as a dedicated bike path, ped bike pathways that lead directly to the intersection. The other aerials that I've given you simply highlight that information. There's also suggestion that this has poor transit access. That's a 3-minute walk from the site to the Sylvan Interchange. The Sylvan Interchange is served by the number 58 bus, which leads both to Beaverton Transit Center and to downtown. Not the 3 to 4 minute walk to transit absolutely ought to be considered transit accessible in this day and age. Last document is from our traffic engineer, rebutting the contention that sidewalks would never be installed along Southwest 61st. Indeed, upon development, they will be.
And remind us again, you represent?
Dr. Nader Razuli, who is the owner of 6141 Southwest Canyon Court.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next three, last three.
Michael Mahaffey, Martha Stiven, and Ed Fisher.
Thanks for your patience. Sir, why don't you kick it off?
Good afternoon. I'm Michael Mahaffey, Executive Director of the Stasis Foundation, and I'm also a member of the board of the Goose Hollow Neighborhood Association, Goose Hollow Foothills League. On behalf of our president, Tracy Prince, who's also on the board of the Architectural Heritage Center, I'd like to express our great appreciation to Mayor Hales for his amendment number 58. Which removes the upzoning of the Kings Hill Historic District. And this important amendment will prevent demolition of many priceless architectural assets while retaining the already high residential density of Goose Hollow, one of the highest in Oregon, in fact. I'd also like to join the Architectural Heritage Center and express our appreciation to the Council for the other amendments to protect the vital heritage on which our city's livability and prosperity ultimately depend, specifically Amendments 4 and 12. For the record, I'd like to briefly mention the proposed amendments to Policies 3.42 and 4.3, 4.27, 4.45, and 4.52. In closing, I'd like to observe that the protection of Portland's heritage is in no way at odds with its sustainable development, its growth, and affordability. On the contrary, let me assert that heritage is essential to it. I think we're at a crucial moment as a city where so many of the internationally celebrated accomplishments of the last four decades are increasingly in peril. And once again, as in the 1960s, we have the danger of, if you will, an architectural industrial complex that could tempt us to allow irreversible damage to our urban legacy. It is the neighborhoods and their activism, sometimes rowdy activism that has made people uncomfortable, that have safeguarded our livability and our urban quality up to now. And this activism has promoted the proven vitality and diversity of Jane Jacobs' urban vision and rebutted the kind of trickle-down hypertrophic formulas of, say, an Edward Glaser, if you know his work. In that light, I urge the city to reinvigorate and not degrade the neighborhood involvement system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you, and thank you for extending till 5:30. My name is Marty Stiven. I'm a planning consultant, and I'm here tonight on behalf of Belmar Properties and Richard Passantini. I testified before you in January and asked for two amendments to the plan, and I thank you for putting those amendments on your list. The first is at 60th and Belmont. You heard from the neighborhood tonight. Since we testified before you in January, we met with those neighbors, and we heard their concern about the traffic. And then we also learned that the TSP does contain Project 70006 that includes 60th Corridor improvements with specific changes to the intersections at Stark, Burnside, Belmont, and Gleason. We then subsequently testified to the Planning and Sustainability Commission on the TSP, asking them to fund those improvements in the TSP. We also went to staff and talked to them about the incremental impact of on traffic between a mixed-use dispersed and a mixed-use neighborhood plan designation, and learned that given the amount of property and the negligible change in the small increase in density that change would allow, there would be a negligible impact on the transportation system and one that wouldn't show up in their models. So for that reason, your staff is supporting this plan amendment at 60th and Gleason to mixed-use neighborhood, and we would ask you to continue to support it. The other change that we asked for was at 9th and Gibbs, which you've added. We've asked for that to allow additional height and development, and we just want to thank you for putting that amendment on your list, too, and ask for your continued support.
Thank you very much. Sir, you now officially have the last word.
Well, thank you. My name is Ed Fisher, and I am currently the president of the Homestead Neighborhood Association, which is up around the OHSU area. And on April the 8th, I sent a letter to the mayor and the council in expressing the neighborhood's opposition to Amendment M20. So I won't go over the details of that letter right now. I'm here today mostly to reiterate some of our concerns and explain some of the additional reasoning that we're using for our opposition to that. And I am pleased to be the last person you have to listen to today. So thank you for allowing me to be here.
I think I speak for all my colleagues in saying that one of the highlights of our job is actually hearings like this, because it always brings out the best in Portland. And while there's a little bit of the endurance side of the equation, the quality of the testimony and the civility of this conversation makes us all proud to be Portlanders.
I agree. You know. Well said. I agree. So as you know, M20 has two parts. One would be extending the mixed-use zoning westward away from OHSU along Gibbs from 11th to 12th. Our neighborhood association is against any additional commercialization in that area. We believe that there are enough blocks now. There's a lot of area that's currently zoned mixed-use that are not being utilized. There are several vacant lots, actually, on the east side of 11th. There are a lot of places up there now that we believe there is sufficient space for commercial development, and we would like to keep that from encroaching westward into the residential part of our neighborhood. Our neighborhood was, in fact, contrary to a testimony you heard earlier, at the meeting on April 5th, at the neighborhood, the advisory meeting, there were only two people voting in favor of the M20 amendment, not four, as was said earlier. And those two happened to be the property owner and the person he brought to the meeting with him. The rest of us, and at the subsequent meeting of the board of directors of the Neighborhood Association, it was held right after that meeting, it was unanimous that we opposed M20 as it's currently written. But the second part is the upzoning from mixed-use neighborhood to mixed-use neighborhood. And our opposition to that primarily is around the commercial use and the commercial development that would be possible. One thing that's of significant concern to the neighborhood up there is parking and traffic. And the upzoning to mixed-use neighborhood would allow commercial parking structures. And the fear is that this could lead to additional traffic on the hill. And currently, there are a lot of residents up there that are actually selling spots on their property to people working and working at OHSU in the medical complex. And that's a real concern because it exacerbates the traffic situation. I need to say that we are not necessarily opposed to another tool that you may not have in your toolbox and would suggest that perhaps staff or someone could look into it. We're not opposed to increasing the height and providing greater density of residential density in those areas, but we believe that going to that upzoning of the commercial use could be detrimental to our neighborhood. And in a nutshell, that's my testimony.
Thank you very much, sir. Well, so can we have staff come back just for a sec? We'll just do a little housekeeping, and then we'll close the hearing. We will continue the hearing. Eric, will you just walk us through, again, next steps? People that want to submit written testimony and the continuation of this hearing and what you anticipate over the next 2 weeks.
Sure. I believe you earlier closed the hearing and agreed to accept testimony on the first item.
Correct.
On the supporting documents through this Friday. Was that
Friday close of business?
Right. So that's the next step with that. I don't know how many more we have in the queue, but the date that we have to continue this is April 27th, 2 p.m. in this building.
Correct. We have about 40, I think.
Yeah. So, and I'm not sure if you earlier I heard maybe the suggestion that continuation be just for the people already on the list. Was that
correct?
What I heard correctly?
I think that's the consensus.
We would also suggest that you then continue taking written testimony through that time.
So ordered.
In terms of clarity of when the deadline is. After that point, we still have on our agenda the meeting on the 28th, which we would begin working through the amendments, and we agreed to start with the easier, non-controversial ones.
And to the extent possible, you'll put those together as packages?
Yeah. and then we have either May 5th or May 11th, and we're still working with the council clerk to confirm the final session time for that, but that would be a continuation of what we start on the 28th, but likely it would be the more difficult items.
My hope is, since I'm gone that first week, that if there's the more difficult ones that may have a split vote, we would kick over to the 11th so we could have I could participate in those votes.
Right, that was our intent, I think.
So can I get one clarification, Eric? You have two items, one of which you're expecting to hear testimony on the 27th. Carla has to figure out how this appears on the agenda. Do you want the supporting documents to be continued then to next Thursday, the 28th?
No.
Doesn't show up on the agenda at all on Wednesday?
The supporting documents would not be on the agenda Wednesday. It would just be taken to the next stage of debating any amendments to that on the 28th.
Okay, but the 395 today would show up both for Wednesday afternoon and Thursday afternoon?
Correct. Okay. Yeah.
Thank you for that clarification. Colleagues, any questions or concerns? Susan, last word? Thumbs up? Okay. Well, we're going to continue this hearing. Thank you all very much.
Previously scheduled, or did we just do that?